We Act Radio, powered by Ethical Electric.
All right. Thank you so much, Virginia, for that wonderful report. Folks, we're as I mentioned at the top, we're going to have Abigail Smith, the Deputy Mayor of Education, joining us. We tried something a little different around here this morning, and so we're trying to work out the technical issues. So I'm waiting for her to join us on the line. But I believe, Peter, are you with us this morning? Peter McPherson, are you?
I am on the line.
I'm sorry. Who?
That's this? Abigail.
Oh, Abigail, you are
this
with us.
Abigail, I am here. I have been here. Here I am.
Oh, thank you so much. I was told that you weren't there. But anyway, I apologize. Thank you so much for joining us here this morning on the Education Town Hall. I know you're very busy. But I wanted to get you to come on to talk about this new student assignment and school boundary process, because this is something that has not been looked at for a very, very long time. In fact, I recall when I was in school, my K to 12 DCPS career, which spanned from 1960 to 1973, I remember going through the boundary changes a couple, at least twice and maybe three times during that time frame. And so I'm not sure if we've had any boundary changes I know we haven't had any boundary changes in recent years. So this is going to be something that's long overdue. So I wanted you to come on and talk about this process, what you envision, what you have planned, and how you want to roll it out, and who you expect to help, and what you expect them to do, and all those details. So we wanted to hear directly from you.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for having me on, Thomas. I appreciate it. And as you say, it has been a very long time since the boundaries have been redrawn in a comprehensive way in the district. In fact, the last time that it was done whole scale was in 1968. So we definitely have had a lot of changes in the city since then, lots of schools that have closed and moved and opened, population changes in various parts of the city. And so the result right now is a boundary and feeder pattern system that is, some would say, pretty convoluted.
It is convoluted, and I know that – this is Virginia Spatz speaking, by the way. And I know that we have a lot of anxiety among parents because of the current state of confusion, but also this process is engendering its own set of anxiety. So I wonder if we could talk about that right at the top.
Sure. So as you say, Virginia, there's confusion that exists now, but the notion of changing boundaries is one that can create a lot of anxiety because no one knows exactly what's going to happen at the other end, and how it affects how your own kid has rights to attend various schools is obviously about as important a thing as any parent can imagine in terms of their kid's education. So let me talk a little bit about the process that we're taking and sort of the overall timeline. We've just launched the process, and it will conclude, so I'll sort of work backwards from the end, with a final plan that we expect to release in September of 2014, with the understanding that no changes would actually take effect until the 15-16 school year. So we'd want to have, a year's warning for families before any changes take effect. And even at that point, we expect that there would be grandfathering. So if a student is currently in a school, we don't want to see situations where kids have to move schools midstream and that sort of thing. So that's kind of the end of the process. Working up until that point, we expect a very comprehensive discussion as a community around what the values are and what the current challenges are that we have in trying to create a boundary and feeder system that really works for families. And so there are a few big elements to that engagement process as we go from sort of initial discussion to developing initial proposals to engaging the community in those and then, the final proposal. So let me just highlight a couple of the engagement pieces, and then I'll stop talking and hear what others have to say. So one piece is we have assembled an advisory committee that's co-chaired by me and John Hill, who's a longtime leader in the district, that will be sort of shepherding the process throughout. And that advisory committee is made up of about 22 folks, from every ward in the city, and a diverse group of perspectives, lots of parents on the committee, people who've got different professional expertise in things like urban planning. You know, we've got legal expertise, civil rights, so some of the things that are likely to come up through the process. But we also just wanted people who really are going to come to the table, you know, with an open mind and a citywide perspective. So no one is representing their particular school or community, but we hope that by having such a diverse group, we'll have a lot of different perspectives. So that's one piece. Then we've got a series of focus groups that have already started. We've had our first two, which are open to anybody to sign up, and we've had, you know, well over 100 people sign up already for focus groups. We'll add more focus groups if they all fill. And those are just opportunities at the front end of the process for people to be able to articulate as a parent or a member of the community, here's what is most important to me, here's what I want to make sure is part of this process, what my concerns are, what people's initial questions are as we launch the process, so that we're really going into it with a good baseline understanding of the community's sort of concerns at the front end. There'll also be a series of working groups that will launch a little bit later in the process. So once we've got some more kind of concrete options that we're starting to wrestle with, we'll assemble working groups. Again, people can already sign up for those online, and this is all on the Deputy Mayor's website, dme.dc.gov. So those will be in the spring, and they'll meet a couple of times, and they'll actually be looking at, here are some actual scenarios that we're trying to figure out pros and cons on. So that will be a sort of more concrete stage. And then there'll be a very sort of wide community meeting series in once we have our initial proposal. So that will be in May and June. We'll have a series of community meetings around the city to lay out, all right, here's our initial take. Here are the options that we are narrowing down on, and we want to get community feedback at that point on what are the implications of those concrete options that we're putting out there, so that we can then go back and refine that in time to be able to have a final plan in September. Along with all of those sort of established avenues for engagement that I talked about, we also are welcoming invitations to any community meetings that people have. So we've already gone to a couple of those, some standing, whether it's PTAs or community organizations that are particularly focused on this issue. So we have a bunch of those scheduled and want to be able to do as much of that as people are interested in, because we want people to know what's going on, but at least as importantly for us, we want to be able to get feedback all along the process so that we are really building something that reflects communities' concerns.
Okay. Abigail Smith, this is Thomas Byrd again. I wanted to ask a couple questions. First, you mentioned grandfathering. Does that mean that that's going to be a permanent exception, or is that a temporary situation? You said you don't want folks to have to move abruptly. But is that going to be on a temporary basis, or are they going to be excluded for their entire academic career?
So I don't know the specifics on that yet, Thomas. I think the extent of the grandfathering will be something we'll have to figure out. I do know that our basic principle is we're trying to move towards more clarity and predictability for families, and so we think it would undermine that goal to have kids who are, say, in fourth grade and just have one more year at their school to have to move, or to have, you know, someone who is expecting to feed into a school the very next year, you know, not be able to do that. We don't want to make those kinds of changes that families can't plan for. So I think that, you know, as a general rule, any kid that is enrolled in a school right now, as of when the changes take place, we wouldn't want them to have to move at that point. So I think that one, you know, I think I'm pretty safe in saying that that's probably where we'll end up in terms of, you know, feeder patterns. And I've joked with people that some folks have said that they would like to grandfather their grandchildren and that obviously, you know, is something that's going to be a little too far for
right.
us.
And that's why I asked, because when you start creating exceptions, everyone wants to, you know, have that exception. So I'm concerned about that. And I know there needs to be some more thoughtful conversation around that. But we're going to take a quick pause and come back on the other side of the break. We're talking to Abigail Smith, the Deputy Mayor of Education. We're going to take a quick break, but I guarantee if you stay with us, we will be right back.
You're listening to WPWC We Act Radio, 1480 AM, weactradio.com.
My name is Jamira Bullock, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
My name is Wallace Bright, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
My name is Victoria Harper, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
My name is James Hill, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
We've been talking with our peers across the District of Columbia, and we discovered that a lot of them are talking about how they believe that we are not being provided the high-quality education that we know we need and quite frankly deserve.
They are talking about students in other jurisdictions who are, for the most part, learning and being supported in modern facilities and have access to 21st century technology.
We're hearing them say that there are actually three public school systems in the district, DCPS West, DCPS East of the River, and public charter schools.
They are saying things like, we have been subjected to too many experimental models, unproven educational fads, and countless changes in philosophy and direction.
Some students are talking about how they feel that some of those in charge of our education system talk the good talk about reform and use all the other buzzwords, but at the end of the day, don't really give a damn about academic achievement for all.
Worst of all, everyone is talking about how we don't even have any voice in the public discourse around the direction of our education system.
Until now, because we all listen and share our views on the education town hall, we are thankful that the host, Thomas Bird, believes that we should have access as well as a megaphone to talk back to the powers that be in the district and in halls of Congress. Join Thomas Bird every Thursday at 11 a.m. for the education town hall, 1480 a.m. Listen live online at weactradio.com.
I'm a third grade teacher.
I'm a school bus driver.
I am a parent.
I am a teacher's aide. And I agree to be identified
as a caring adult who pledges to help bullied students.
I will listen carefully to all students who seek my help
and act on their behalf
to put an immediate stop to bullying.
I will work with other caring adults to create a safe
learning environment for all the students in my school.
In my school.
In my school.
In my school.
I'm Dennis Van Roekel, president of the National Education Association. Help us create safe, bully-free learning environments for all students. One caring adult can make all the difference. Be that adult and take the pledge at nea.org/bullyfree. Adults have the power to stop bullying in our schools.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
Bully free. It starts with me.
Visit nea.org/bullyfree. A message from the National Education Association.
Hi, I'm Denise Rolark Barnes, publisher of the Washington Informer newspaper, and you've asked whether I think a show on education is a good idea for the District of Columbia, and I would give an unequivocal yes, it is. Information is power. We always know that. But information about education, resources, the politics, the finances, the what our young people could and should be achieving and what should be taught in the classroom is an exceptional you can't talk enough about it. Let me just say that. And I'm so glad that you are having the show. Continue to do the good work that you're doing. And folks out there, you just keep listening. If there's something you don't hear on the show, I'm sure that the folks here would love to hear from you. And make sure it's a topic for an upcoming show. So keep on listening.
All right, we're now back live. Thank you so much for being here with us today on the Education Town Hall. This is your host, Thomas Bird, and it is indeed an honor, a pleasure, and a privilege to have on the line with us today the Deputy Mayor of Education, Abigail Smith. I also want to ask those who have joined us on the conference call to identify yourselves and give your, you know, your name and organization if you're affiliated with one. Who's with us?
Shawana Robinson from the Ward 8 Education Council.
Okay. Who else?
Hi, this is Faith Hubbard.
Peter.
Okay. Faith, why don't you go first?
Okay. Faith Hubbard with the Ward 5 Council on Education.
Next.
And Peter McPherson with the Capitol Hill Public School Parent Organization.
Okay. Is Ebony Rose, are you with us?
Yes, I am. This is Ebony Rose Thompson, Ward 7 Education Council.
All right, fantastic. So now we have all our folks with us, and we're glad you also are joining us on this call with the Deputy Mayor of Education. And so I know that Virginia had a question, so I'm going to swing back over to her. And then after her question is answered, I want you all to chime in if you have questions or comments. I'll go to our other callers. Virginia?
Thanks. I know that we have a lot of issues to discuss, but before we get into the weeds, I want to make sure that we understand the process. And the deputy mayor told us that the plan should be ready by the fall of 2014. But I'm unclear what exactly that means. Does that mean a proposal will go to the DC Council and that has to go through its own approval process? Or can the mayor just adopt this? What will happen with that plan that's ready in 2014?
Yep, that's a great question. So the mayor has authority over the boundary revision. So what we'll do with the end of this process is to present him with proposed recommendations, and then he will make the final decision, and at that point, it becomes policy.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Okay. Our guest, who wants to go first?
Why don't we do it in order of wards? Let's start with Faith, since she's Ward
Faith.
5.
Okay, that's a good idea. Faith?
And I'm just addressing. So I am on the committee, and our first meeting was just a basic meeting talking about kind of the task that was at hand and outlining kind of next steps and just talking about our own views and biases so that we could be aware of those things as we proceed forward in the process. I know that there has been a lot of conversation that will probably come up as we continue on the show today around the selection process of people that were on the committee. And so as those things come up, then I'd be more than happy to address those as well.
But I
am looking forward to participating on the committee. I think that it's an important task. Of course, if you're on the committee, there's definitely a target on your back because this is work that people want done, but everyone won't be happy with the process the way that that all things fall out. So I look forward to seeing how things move forward and hoping that any issues that have come up to date regarding who is on the committee or who isn't on the committee can really be resolved, because I don't want it to be shrouded in any confusion as we move forward in this process.
Well, let me, since you brought that up, let's get right to it. I want to ask Abigail Smith, you indicated earlier that you all decided that you wanted to have diversity and expertise on this committee. So how did you go about identifying the areas of expertise that you wanted to have represented, as well as those individuals that possess that expertise?
Sure. So we wanted to have a committee that was big enough to really represent broad perspective, but small enough that we could really engage in the conversations and people could commit to to the regular meetings throughout the process. And so we landed on, this sort of 20-ish size. So we began to, there are obviously lots of folks in the district who have certainly the interest and the passion and who are very engaged in these kind of issues across the city. So the good news is that we had a really big pool from which to, to start looking. And we wanted to balance number of things. One, we wanted to just ensure there was representation across all the wards, and so that was, that's sort of the easy quantifiable one. We were able to do that, of course, without a problem.
But if I may interrupt, you wanted representation from across the wards, but they're not ward representatives. Is that the correct distinction?
That's exactly. I think that's a really important point, Thomas. That we don't want, because this is not sort of an elected body, we don't want anyone to be in the position of feeling like they have to represent or even should be representing their school or their neighborhood or their ward per se, because there are obviously many perspectives within any one of those groups. We wanted people who bring that range of perspectives so that the conversation would reflect that. And we want people to go back to their communities and talk with their neighbors and their friends and the people at their school, whether that's their local school or a school that they go to, you know, outside of their boundary. So we certainly want to bring all of that into the conversation, but we don't want anyone to be in the position of having to represent or advocate for one particular community. We want people to come to this with a citywide perspective to be able to think about how does this work across all of our communities while reflecting the perspectives of everyone.
Okay.
So that was an important piece. You know, we wanted to make sure there were plenty of parents on the committee. Not everyone on the committee is a parent, but obviously this affects parents most directly, and so we wanted to ensure that the preponderance of folks have that experience as well. And then in terms of professional expertise, there are a number of areas that, you know, we certainly wanted to make sure were included, one being legal expertise, urban planning, which obviously, you know, has a big intersection in terms of the work we're doing, education generally, you know, public education, and then civil and human rights, because as you know, and there's certainly a long history of this in D.C., as in pretty much every city in the country, one of the things that comes up when you're drawing boundaries is questions of equity and access that in some cases, you know, come down to issues of civil rights. And so we wanted to ensure that we have expertise on the body for that. We'll also be conferring with experts certainly outside of the group, so it doesn't limit our expertise to just who's sitting in the room. But we did want to have that mix.
Okay. Let me go to Ebony Rose.
Hi, Thomas. Well, I guess I should say that the Ward 7 Education Council was one of the groups that raised concerns about the composition of the committee and the process. And we've been in contact with the deputy mayor's office. We actually have a meeting coming up with the technical team on Saturday. So I do understand that there are several entry points, if you will, into this school boundary revision process. However, I think there's a difference between giving an opportunity to respond to something and being in the room when you're able to make decisions. And while I completely support parents being on the committee, I completely support a range of expertise or a range of perspectives, I do think that the expertise and the perspectives that you want are going to be ones that are familiar with both entire wards and entire sections of the city. And I think there are concerns, as Ward 7, when we initially started the conversation with the deputy mayor's office, when the press release came out, there wasn't a Ward 7 parent on the release. That person was later added. I believe they were reached out to beforehand, but they weren't there. So when I looked at the list, I said, I don't see anyone who would be representative of Ward 7 education on this list.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I guess, delving deeper into that, I think that as a parent or a community member, sometimes we can have limited perspectives. And I think that when you have someone who has more of a school-based perspective, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're familiar with their entire community, nor does it necessarily mean that, they have the access to or the network, if you will, to help engage other people in the process. Because when I spoke with, and Mary's probably going to kill me, but I spoke with someone from 21st Century Fund last week, and she told me only 10 people were registered from Ward 7. I would hope that there would be someone from Ward 7 on that community who can really reach into the community to not just give our perspective and talk about how we fit in citywide, but who can encourage others to participate. So I've been going to some PTA meetings, actually went to Beer's PTA meeting last night and shared with them the process, and they're really excited to participate. I encourage them to sign up for working groups. So while I do think it's important for parents to be on the committee, I completely think it's important to have a diverse range of perspectives, and I appreciate the distinction between someone representing their ward and living in the ward, because they're two different things. I think that when selecting people for this committee, they not only need to have diverse perspectives, but be able to reach out and engage others in this very important process.
And Abigail, I'm not sure if you want to respond at this time. If you want to, I'll allow you. But I wanted to get another comment in from the Ward 8 a representative, which is Sharona Robinson. She's the secretary of the Water Education Council. And in the interest of transparency, I'm the vice chair of the Water Education Council, but I will not share my own views, which I don't normally do on my show. So, Sharona, would you please have at it?
Yes, thank you, Thomas. And again, thank you, everyone, for coming on. I do agree a lot with Ebony, especially about the piece where making sure every ward is represented adequately. But I don't have a question per se. It's more along the lines of a comment. I don't know if all of you are aware, I used to be an attendance counselor at Ballou High School. So I do bring the perspective of not only a parent, a community member, but also someone who worked in the school. But the grandfathering piece, it definitely needs to be clear because although you did, Abigail, say that if someone is transitioning from one school to another, you know, and they would be affected by the process, then they would, you know, probably most likely be able to go to that school. But the question is, will they be allowed to stay and remain there? You know, will that now be their school of right? Or once everything, I guess, changes over, will they have to go to, you know, their neighborhood school or go through the application process to, you know, get into a particular school?
Sharona, let me ask you to pause there. I'm going to give Abigail a chance to respond to both Ebony Rose and yourself, and we're going to take a break at 11:40.
Okay, I did also just want to say that I did sign up for a focus group and some working groups, and I'm encouraging other people to do so as well.
Okay. Abigail, you want to respond?
So first I want to thank both Ebony and Sharona for encouraging people to sign up for those working groups, and I hope that all of your listeners, Thomas, will do the same thing. Again, as soon as our focus groups are all filled, we'll just add more. So thus far, we still have, you know, spots in all of them. And you can sign up for those groups on the Deputy Mayor for Education website. So please do that because we certainly want all of that. And if there are other opportunities that existing groups that have regular meetings and want to just invite us to those meetings sort of in lieu of a focus group, we're also happy to do that. So thank you for reaching out to the community on that front. In terms of the question around the grandfathering. So I think, Sharona, you are the piece that I'll sort of pull out of what you said is when you pointed out that we need to be really clear on what those grandfathering rules are. And I think that is absolutely right. So while right now it's just too early in the process for me to say, you know, this is what all of those, you know, those rules and expectations will be, because, you know, we're going to need to have a lot more conversation. What I can say is that I'm committed to being really clear and explicit about exactly what that looks like so that there's not, you know, there's not confusion going into it. So people know, all right, if I'm in this school, I know I can stay, you know, period, and I can stay until this school's last grade. You know, alternatively, I know that if I'm, you know, below the second grade, then the school I'm going to feed into is, you know, X school, but if I'm currently in the fourth or the fifth grade, you know, I can feed into the school that I had expected to. Those kinds of things, and I'm just using those as examples, you know, they may look like that, they may not, but whatever it is, we want to be able to be very, very specific so that the families know. And you know, there's not, as Faith noted, not everybody's going to be happy with where this ends up. I can pretty much guarantee that because, you know, that's how life goes.
Yes,
right?
I know that. Let me pause. I want to get Peter in because we're going to take a break in about a minute or so. And I want to get Peter an opportunity to get in here before we take our final break for the show. Peter?
It's nice to be chatting with you this morning. I'm just curious about, this might sound a little bit confrontational, but the presence of anyone, you know, from the charter school community, whether they're parents or representatives of charter schools or charter school board, on, you know, a boundary redrawing exercise for DCPS. Now, I know that you and the mayor, you know, are very committed to trying to, you know, get more cooperation between these two sectors. But with that said, I mean, right now, fundamentally, the two sectors still are in a, you know, competitive kind of posture, that that they are competing for students, and that new charter schools are you know, on the flight to get a hearing before the charter school board about starting next fall. And, you know, it just strikes me, at least right now in the current environment, like the presence of people from the charter community is a kind of an inherent conflict of interest, that it's like having Apple attending Hewlett-Packard board meetings and weighing in about what factories should be opened or closed, or what product lines should be discontinued. But I just think, you know, that that there is a that there's just an inherent conflict of interest, and I'm just curious to hear, you know, why you think, if you think this is not the case, why that is, and you know, what steps you you know, you might take to open up, try to open up you know, the deliberative processes of the charter school board, the charter community, to comparable input from
Peter,
the larger community.
Peter, Peter, I mentioned I had to take a break. I was trying to get you in. I was hoping you would be a little briefer, but we're going to take a break, and we'll have Abigail answer that question when we come back. Folks, we're glad you're along with us. If you stay with us, we'll see you on the other side of the break.
You're listening to WPWC We Act Radio, 1480 AM, weactradio.com.
I'm Tom Matzey, founder and CEO of Ethical Electric. We're America's only progressive clean energy company. We support the causes you care about every day when you pay your power bill.
And so we think people, if it, when they want to support something good like clean energy, they also don't want to support dirty energy politics. And so we offer a way to get off both dirty energy and get off of dirty energy politics. We're talking about companies that gave money, you know, to Rick Perry, the infamous Texas climate denier. That's the company that owns the largest kind of quote unquote green energy company in New York right now, Green Mountain Energy.
Ethical Electric gives you clean energy for your home. You can support progressive causes when you pay your power bill. You don't have to give all of your money to dirty energy anymore. You can get off both dirty energy and get off dirty energy companies. We Act Radio, powered by Ethical Electric. Do something.
Ashrata. It's Asherada on the AM dial. Call me up and we'll talk for a while. If you want to keep it real and hear the tea, believe me, this is the place to be. Excuse you crazy for real. Excuse you, you crazy for real. Excuse you, you crazy for real. Look, she can say word, Asherada.
This is Sherado on the Asherada Radio Show on We Act Radio 1480 AM and weactradio.com. Fierce, fearless, fabulous.
And this is Senora. Tune in every Thursday at 7 p.m. broadcasting live from historic Anacostia in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital.
Tune in every Thursday at 7 p.m. for the Asherado Show, giving great advice and dogmatic opinions on love, life, and leisure, guaranteeing the unfiltered, undeniable, and unadulterated truth.
We Act 1480 AM and WeActRadio.com, the city's only independent progressive radio station.
Rich could say word, Asherado.
You're listening to We Act Radio, WPWC 1480 AM. Now get out there and do something.
All right. We are now back live. Thank you so much for being here with us today on the Education Town Hall. This is your host, Thomas Byrd, and it's indeed an honor, a pleasure, and a privilege to have on the line with us our special guest, the Deputy Mayor of Education, Abigail Smith. Abigail, before we went to break, Peter put a question before you regarding the charter and charter sector and DCPS working together on this. So could you respond to his concerns?
Sure.
So as Peter noted, there are people who are on the advisory committee who either are parents of kids in charter schools, or who there's one member of the committee who's actually on the public charter school board. And here's the rationale, and I think you know, you're raising a fair point of why, if this is a DCPS process, why should charter schools be involved? Right now, as I'm sure everyone on this call is aware, 44% of our public school students in the city go to public charter schools. And that means that in any given community and even in any given family, there are many situations where you've got one kid in a charter school and one kid in a DCPS school, and that moves back and forth for many families over the years as, you know, their situations change and as kids move on to different grade levels and that sort of thing. And the reality is that the way families approach their public school experience, in most cases in this city, people are considering in some ways both public charter schools and DCPS schools. And so for us to approach the process without taking into account that whole piece of the picture, so all of the data and trends that involve charter schools as part of that picture, would really be problematic. The way parents think about what is most important to them, how they make their choices, and all of that. The charter piece is certainly a big piece of it, and we feel like to not incorporate that into our discussion and thinking would really just not be a smart thing to do, given the current reality. The other thing that I'll say is that we do think that there's a good opportunity to use this process to think about whether there are creative opportunities for things that don't exist right now, like feeder patterns that could cross LEAs, that could go from a charter school to a DCPS school or vice versa, to look again at the question of whether neighborhood preference or even a charter school is right, where it would have a catchment area the way a DCPS school does, and whether that's something that, from a family perspective, would help with this notion of predictability and access, you know, guaranteed access to schools. So those are questions that we think are smart to put on the table at the same time while we're having this conversation.
Okay, I want to get Virginia back in because I know she had a concern, but also I want to say to everyone involved, let's try to keep our questions or comments brief so we can get as much in as possible. We only got about 12 minutes left in the show, and so I want to cover as much ground as we can. So if we all agree, let's move forward. Virginia?
Okay. I want to ask our deputy mayor and our other guests about the issue of participation in this process. Given that citizens have very recently been used and sort of abused by the previous deputy mayor's office process with the whole community conversations mess, and there's really a long history of citizens in the district being asked for their input and then having that input ignored. And so I'd first actually like to hear from some of our guests to make sure that I'm not putting words into anybody's mouth, and then have the deputy mayor respond.
I would definitely have to agree with what you just said, Virginia, and I know at our first meeting this was definitely something that I raised as one of my questions, and I think a couple of other people did as well. If we think back to the community conversations that happened around the city, and, you know, we talked about a lot of different things, and there was supposed to be something to come out of that, and then the person who was running the process and the deputy mayor both left, and nothing really came out of that. So I do think that that's, you're not crazy. That's definitely a concern, because a lot of people were really turned off by not only that process, but many other processes that have happened in the past. So I know that that was definitely a question that was raised, and that it needs to be a very genuine and authentic process. And you're really going to have to try to reach people who haven't been jaded by the process before.
Ebony?
Yes. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that goes back to the comments that both I and Sharona raised about appropriate representation. I know that with the community conversations in particular, the education, because the Ward 7 Education Council, we didn't participate. And it was actually ANC, the ANC that I'm a part of, I'm also a commissioner, that led that process. And the reason I know that commission was chosen was because someone had a relationship with the current chair. Did that mean that they were the best person or the best entity to lead that process? No. Was that person actually running for school board? Yes.
Okay. So let me ask you, Ebony, because I'm trying to, I hate to interrupt you, but I'm trying to get as much in as possible. So you say that what Virginia said, you agree with, and if I could ask you to say yes or no, Sharona, do you agree with the concerns that Virginia raised also?
Well, Thomas, let me say this, though. The reason I brought that up is because it goes back to people being jaded with the process. So
okay.
I know that in our ward in particular, our feeder patterns have been decimated, and I would say the same for Ward 8. And you have a lot of people who are looking at this not necessarily as an opportunity to participate because of past decisions that have been made, and not that Abigail was there then, but it's just an illustration.
Okay. Sharona, do you agree?
Yes, Thomas, I do agree.
Okay. Peter, what about you, briefly?
Well, I guess the thing for me about, you know, all of these attempts at supposedly bringing the public into you know, the deliberations about important aspects of education policy issues, that are they real or not? I felt deeply ambivalent last year about all the respective things that take place in the different wards vis-a-vis the school closings. It's just like, you know, at times it felt somewhat like making a pretense of listening as opposed to, you know, something that was actually going to inform decisions. I mean, in the end, the schools that were closed did not change a whole lot from what was on the list when the whole thing started.
In okay.
Spite of, you know, very passionate pleas by stakeholders. And so, you know, I think that the deputy mayor has the unfortunate task of trying to persuade, you know, sort of a skeptical community that, you know, that we are all in this together, that their voices really will be heard.
Okay, let me ask you to pause there and give Abigail a chance to respond.
So, as Faith noted, this is an issue that certainly came up at our first advisory committee meeting, and frankly, it's an issue that comes up, you know, probably weekly for me in conversations with folks, and I think that it's very real. The fact is that there's a long history of situations, you know, not just in education, but in, you know, lots of different arenas where community members feel like they've been burned and they've been asked to engage and they've given their feedback and they don't feel like it's made a difference. So I understand that is a history, and it's not one that I can change. You know, the history is what it is. What I can do is commit to an open process where not only will we have lots of opportunities for people to engage in very substantive ways, but that we will listen, we will work to understand all of the different perspectives, and to take that into account. At the end of the day, there is no way we end this process with everybody being happy, but I absolutely expect that the engagement that we have will influence a whole bunch of the decisions we make along the way. And I think, you know, the example that you gave, Peter, on the school closures, you know, the other way of looking at, of sort of flipping the comment that you just made is that there were changes that were made as a result of the community engagement. So it is true that for the most part that proposal, you know, remained intact, but the fact that there were changes do suggest that, you know, that people are listening. It doesn't mean that it's going to, you know, that anything we do is going to make everybody happy, in part because, you know, there's going to be conflicting feedback, and we've already gotten conflicting feedback that, you know, if you literally can't do both of those things,
well,
right? And so we're going to be in those kinds of situations.
Let me ask you, Abigail, this is a contentious issue. Do you think that had some bearing on the fact that this process has not been engaged in for a very, very long time?
Oh, yes, Thomas. I certainly do think. I think you are reading that exactly right. And, you know, people, I have to say that since we announced that we were actually doing this process, and there have been several false starts on this over, you know, recent years, but, you know, everybody I've talked to has said, are you crazy? Nobody does boundaries. You know, how did you draw the short straw? And the fact is that, you know, the mayor feels strongly, and I feel strongly, that as much as this is a contentious process, it has to be done. We have to have that kind of clarity, and it has to be done in a way that that has, you know, a long enough period of time that really have robust community engagement. And so that's how, you know, that's what we've set up, and that's what we're taking on.
And we've got a mayoral election coming up, so this is something that could have impact on that, the outcome of that election. But I know Virginia had, I believe you had another concern, or am I mistaken?
No, I do. I have many concerns. And so actually, I guess the first thing I'd say is I hope everybody who's on the line now can come back and we can talk about this as the year progresses. But one question that seems to me to be always just kind of under the surface, and half the time we don't address it, is the question of race, which comes up a lot on the Education Town Hall and, of course, is at the heart of many of our issues here. And so I'm wondering, obviously it has to have been considered, and you know, you talked about civil rights, but is there any kind of plan to have the city engage in some really difficult conversations that need to come up, and that I'm afraid the mayoral race are not necessarily going to help? Is that something that the DME is trying, or is that beyond your ken?
And let me ask you to be brief. We only have a few minutes left in the show.
All right, I'll be really brief. I am so glad you raised that, Virginia. There is no question that race and class are absolutely central to these conversations that we're going to be having around boundaries, and I hope that we as a city can have those tough conversations together in a really direct way.
Fantastic. We've got about a couple of minutes left. I wanted to offer you an opportunity, Abigail Smith, to just give whatever remarks you want to leave us with regard to this process, because as we all will agree, it's a very contentious issue. We agree that all concern will be, no one will be happy. Well, everyone won't be happy. Let me put it that way. There's going to be some problems. There's some problems already from the beginning, because people are skeptical or leery about this process because they've been burned before. There's so many headwinds with regard to this whole thing. So what do you want to leave with us to give us some assurance, or to settle people down, to get them to really engage this process? Because there's a reason why there's only a small number of people who have signed up in Ward 7. I don't know what the number is for Ward 8 or the other wards, but you know, this process is not starting off as good as I would like for it to start off. So what can you leave us with to help us, to put us at ease?
So I would say that my big message is, please, please take advantage of the various ways, and it doesn't have to be this week or this month, right? This is going to be an ongoing process, so people can come in and out of it, but to take advantage of the various ways that we have for people to really substantively engage. So again, all of this information is on the DME website, where you can sign up for focus groups and working groups. The engagedc.org forum will be up soon. There'll be an online survey shortly, or I guess the online survey is going to be a little bit later in the process, but where we hope to get a really broad, in level of engagement, and then these citywide community dialogues that will be in the spring.
And what about people who don't have internet access? I'm sorry to interrupt, but there's a lot of people, and maybe that's an issue here in Ward 7 and Ward 8. What about the people who don't have easy internet access, who are waiting 2 hours for their 10 minutes at the public library? How can they get involved? Can they call, or?
So one, the citywide community dialogues will be in-person events, and so we hope that we'll have, you know, lots of participation in that. The other thing is that, you know, while you're right, the access to sort of computer internet is a challenge. There's basically no, as you all know, no digital divide on our you know, devices that we have in our hands. So we want to be able to use, you know, texting and, you know, being able to do the online surveys, you know, which people can do on their phones as well. So, you know, we'd love everybody's help for ideas of how we can make sure we're getting the word out as best as we can. Again, we will visit any community group that wants us to come and have a conversation around this to get people's feedback and to update them on where things are in the process at whatever point it is.
I have one final question, and we have to wrap up. The advisory committee meetings, are there minutes kept, and will those minutes be published?
Yes. So I think actually the summary of the first meeting is already online. All of the outputs of the advisory committee will be public. The deck that we used at the first meeting is also already online. So all that information will be there. And you're right, Virginia, not everybody's got that access. So, you know, we hope that people who are, you know, who do have that access will, you know, will also be working to make sure that the materials that are sort of most interesting, you know, that they're helping to share elsewhere.
All right. That's going to have to be the last word. Thank you so much, Deputy Mayor of Education Abigail Smith, for joining us here on the Education Town Hall. I want to thank Peter McPherson. I want to thank Faith Hubbard. I want to thank Emmy Rose Thompson and Sharona Robinson for calling in, participating in this very important conversation here at the Education Town Hall. And so thanks to all my guests. I want to thank my feature reporter, Virginia Spatz, for her concerns and her input and for her earlier report. And so, folks, until next Thursday at 11 a.m., have a great week. This is your host, Thomas Byrd, for Virginia Spatz. Peace.